evening, it's our pleasure to welcome Scott McClellan, press secretary to President Bush, who was there during several different time periods of a lot of legislation, of re-election campaign, and so he can speak to us from many different viewpoints in his years there. You were there for 2.5 years?
I was, well, 5.5 years total, and almost three as press secretary.
As press secretary, yeah. And I thought, Scott, that why don't you start off by telling us how you got into communications, and we have a lot of students who are working in internships,
sure,
that are working in the state legislature for the governor, also for the mayor, and they're interested in a political world and a communications world.
Glad to talk about that. I get a lot of questions from students about how do you get involved in politics, but before I get to that, and I do just want to talk about the news of today. You know, as press secretary, obviously there's all sorts of breaking news that comes your way, and today was obviously some awful news to hear about Tony. He is just one of the most decent and nicest guys you'll ever meet, and you know you don't want it to happen to anyone, but especially someone who is such a decent and nice guy as Tony. And so we all keep him in our thoughts and prayers on this day and hope for the best and hope that we will see him back at the podium sooner rather than later. I know he loves the job as much as anything, and as soon as he can get back, he'll get back, and we all hope for the best on that. In terms of jumping back to myself and how I got involved in politics, part of it was I was born into it, and the other part of it, I got involved in it after college. But my mother, I grew up in a family that believed in public service. My grandfather, my mother's father, was dean of the University of Texas School of Law for 25 years, and he taught there most of his life. And he kind of instilled in us the importance of public service as a way to make a positive difference in people's lives. In fact, he used to say that it's not the dollars you make, it's the difference you make. And so I was kind of raised on the importance of public service as a way to make a positive difference in people's lives. My mother, when I was 4 years old, was elected to the Austin School Board in Austin, Texas, that is. I was born and raised there. And so, you know, all I ever knew was her being involved in the political world just about from a very early age. By the time I was in third grade, she was elected mayor of Austin. After having been the school board president, first woman ever elected mayor of Austin. This was back in the late 70s, all the way through the early 80s. There weren't a lot of big city women mayors at that time. In fact, I remember one time when I was at the U.S. Conference of Mayors. I was probably 10 years old. Mom had recently been, you know, this was probably her 2 years into her first term or so as mayor of Austin. And there I was going on all this kid stuff. We were at Six Flags over Atlanta doing the kids' activities for the day, and I loved riding roller coasters when I was little, which probably made it good for me when I got to the briefing room, because you get plenty of roller coasters in politics. But I was waiting in line that day, and this was, you know, like I said, probably 78 or so. And I was standing there by myself. My brothers didn't want to wait in line, so they ran off. I'm the youngest of four. And there are these older guys, probably college age, that are standing in front of me, and they see my little badge that says, Scott McClellan, Austin, Texas, U.S. Conference of Mayors. And the one guy who's a very big guy, I just remember, looked at me and said, oh, so your dad's mayor of Austin? And I said, no, my mother's mayor of Austin. And the guy yells up to friends in the front line, hey, get this, this kid's mom is mayor of Austin. So, you know, I was kind of exposed at an early age to being in the spotlight, at least a little bit at the local level. And she has gone on to serve in statewide office and was served 2 terms most recently as the Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts, or Comptroller as we call it in Texas, and just finished her 2nd term as that. Well, anyway, upon graduating, or actually my senior year in college, I'll turn off my BlackBerry. My senior year in college, I had some extra time. I was taking a lighter course load, and some friends of mine were working on a gubernatorial campaign. And I said, you know, I'd be interested in volunteering just to get involved and see what it's like, because I got a little bit of extra time. Well, I went in. Actually, that friend called me back later that afternoon when I talked to him and said, would you be interested in working part-time? And I said, well, maybe. I got some time on my hands. And he said, well, the press secretary is looking for someone to work in the press office. And so I literally kind of got my start at the lower levels of the press office in that gubernatorial campaign. So I went in and met with the press secretary the very next day. He hired me on the spot. And I came in early each morning before anybody else got there. I did the clips from all the major papers in Austin. So I compiled the news coverage together, did a brief summary, and sent it out to all the senior staff. And then when we won the primary, they asked me to go full-time and do advance work, press advance work. So I was traveling ahead of the candidate and doing press advance work. We actually lost that race, but there's nothing like a loss to help you learn what it's like. I mean, you learn more from those losses than you do from the victories. And so after that, then I, you know, over the years did a series of, Texas politics is my background. I went to work as chief of staff for a Texas state senator. I actually got involved in my mother's statewide races for the Texas Railroad Commission, which regulates the oil and gas industry. And later, I was trying not to continue on with her, and I couldn't continue on with her in government because of nepotism laws, but she kept calling me back. And when she ran for comptroller, her first campaign manager didn't work out, and she asked if I would do it, and I said gladly. It was a very tough race, but she won it. And it was shortly after that race ended, I was helping her a little bit with transition and getting ready to go back to the job that I'd taken a leave from, when the governor's office, Governor Bush's office, called me, Karen Hughes, her office, said, would you be interested in possibly being the deputy communications director here in the governor's office? And this was late 1998, so there were obviously rumors that the president might be running for president. I went in and met with Karen and was hired shortly thereafter, and went to work for him as deputy communications director and stayed through that. That was his very last session as governor. And then when we finished the bill signings and I maybe had a couple of weeks to catch my breath, Karen asked if I'd come over to the campaign, the presidential campaign, and became deputy press secretary at that point. After we started wrapping up the primary and it was known that he was going to win, then I was named traveling press secretary. So Karen Hughes and I were kind of the two spokespeople on the road with the press corps, traveling with people like Ken Herman, who's here in the audience, and others. And so, you know, what I tell people if they want to get involved in politics is a great way to do it is to find a candidate you believe in, go volunteer on a campaign, and get in there early if you can. I got in there very early back in 1990 or 1989, actually, with this gubernatorial campaign. And they notice you. And if you're working working hard and putting in the hours and doing everything you can to help out, whatever it may be, you tend to get noticed. And you know, I've had friends that used to say when I was younger and working in Texas politics and maybe jumping around various jobs, campaigns, or working government, they would say, you know, how do you do that? Isn't it kind of unstable? And oh, not really. I mean, people tend to notice you, and just like any other career path you might follow, and you'll get noticed, and you'll have an opportunity to pursue a variety of interests in the political arena. And it's a great way to make a positive difference. When I went to work for Governor Bush, one of the biggest reasons I wanted to go to work, I was excited about going to work for him, was that he was known as a very popular bipartisan governor, someone who governed from the center based on conservative principles, but he had a record of reaching out across the aisle to Democrats that were in positions of power, the lieutenant governor, the speaker of the House, and getting things done on issues that broader issues like education and juvenile justice reform and cutting taxes and lawsuit reform, to mention a few. And so that's kind of how I got involved in politics. And I had no idea that I would ever end up where I did as White House press secretary. That wasn't something I planned. After the campaign wrapped up, well, after Election Day, I went down to Florida for a while helping out with the recount. Then I was named deputy or principal deputy press secretary and helped with the transition and then moved on to the White House and was deputy press secretary for 2.5 years before my predecessor left. It's a tough and demanding job, and 2 years is probably about the average tenure if you look back over history, and particularly in this 24/7 news cycle that we live in. And I was honored to be able to do it for, well, almost 3 years.
Were there some threads that ran through all of those different communications jobs that you had of things that were important about communications?
Well, sure. I mean, you obviously develop skills along the way that help you in the communications world, and you learn. You learn how to, you know, deal with reporters' questions and hopefully advance your own message that you're trying to get across Obviously, you don't get to write the stories or decide on what goes on the air that night, whether it's on the radio or on TV. Typically, in the case of the radio TV, they're just going to use a short soundbite from you that day. So you're obviously trying to get across that message. Some of the things that you learn about in communications is try to focus on what you're for. At least we did with going back to the days of Governor Bush, that we tried to focus on talking about what we're for rather than what we're against. It's a nice way to try to be more positive in terms of what you're trying to do versus stories writing about what you're opposed to. I think most people want to see government acting and doing stuff to help them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you learn, you know, reporters oftentimes are going to ask questions in a maybe in a negative way. And you learn things like not repeating the negative. When you're responding to questions, they might have, you know, I don't know what it may be. You can think of any number of examples. You know, just one very generic example, you know, you're still beating your wife. We don't want to say, no, I'm not beating my wife anymore or something like that. You want to think of a way to frame that in a positive way back without repeating the negative, because that may be the quote that's used. And it looks kind of defensive when you're up there. Either at the podium or responding in a news article of some sort. So you pick up different skills along the way that are good for communicators that are used throughout your time whenever you're going to be in a position of talking to the press.
Ron Nesson once said that every press secretary knows what needs to be done, that you have to go out, gather all of the information, put it together, make sure you've got the story, and then get it and put it all out.
Absolutely. And one of the roles of a press secretary is to play reporter within the White House. I mean, you're speaking for the, you know, essentially the entire executive branch. You're kind of the face of the administration. And one of the things you do is you have to go out there and collect information so you can report back to the American people through the White House press corps. For example, they're looking to you for answers. And, you know, typically you can tell kind of what the different news is going to be of the day, or news of interest to the reporters, as well as what you're trying to get across that day. So you look to your sources within the White House, which is your White House colleagues or people throughout the administration, whether it might be a cabinet secretary or your colleague, a fellow communicator over at another department. And you're always, you know, most of your day or morning certainly is spent collecting information, trying to respond to news stories that might have been in the papers that morning or been on the news the night before or breaking news that day, so that you can go back and report faithfully to the American people through the White House press corps and the questions that they're asking. Now, just like a reporter, you learn over time that there are more reliable sources than some sources are more reliable than others. And you learn who, you know, whose words you can kind of take it at face value, and others who you have to. And you also do a good bit of checking your sources as well. Maybe someone thinks they have all the information, but you're not sure if it's quite right, so you want to go and check that information elsewhere, either in the White House or in a cabinet department or what have you. And, you know, I can speak from experience that there have been times when sources have not been as reliable as I would have liked, put it mildly.
Is it difficult when you come in that you assume that you know people, you've known them over a period of time, and so you think of them in personal terms, and that once you become press secretary, you're representing an institution, and they know that, and that that it's difficult to get them to be as open as maybe they once were.
You're talking about fellow colleagues?
Yes. That one of the challenges of the job, particularly in dealing with people that you've known a long time, is kind of learning how they see their job and what their own interests are, and that it's difficult to get them to be as forthcoming.
Absolutely. I mean, there's some that you run across that maybe think because you're the press secretary and you're the one who's talking to the press that maybe they should only tell you so much. Now, my reaction to that is, you know, look, I want to know everything you can tell me about a particular subject or topic of the day. Let me decide what information is going to be provided back to and in what format to the press corps. And then there are some, that obviously want to advance their own particular interest, and you have to take that into account as well when you're dealing with them. The great thing about being press secretary is you have 24-hour direct access to the president, and if you ever need to check anything or you're not getting the information you want, I would just walk into the Oval Office and ask him And if, you know, he maybe didn't have all the information at hand, he'd pick up the phone and call someone, whether it was, you know, hey, Condi, get down here. I need to ask you, you know, something. And you would get answers pretty quick if you weren't getting what you needed then. But one of the first things I did, I mean, obviously this White House, after September 11th, became very much more focused, and you know this from covering it, on foreign policy. I mean, before September 11th, it was a different story. There was a lot of domestic issues. But after that time, foreign policy has tended to dominate the news. And one of the first things I did before I started as press secretary was go around to each of the heads of the National Security Council, each region of the National that handled each region of the throughout the world, and asked. I said, give me a briefing. Go over all the key topics in your area. Give me a full briefing. Some of them would do one-on-one. Others would bring in their entire team and go through the key issues that they're focused on and let me ask questions. But it was a good way to kind of get a, you know, I had a sense of things, but that was a good way to hear firsthand from the ones that are actually dealing with those specific issues and also kind of establish a lasting relationship so that day when you call them up and say, look, I need some information on this and I need it quickly. I mean, most of the time, people throughout the White House know when the press secretary is calling or coming by your office, they need that information as soon as possible because you're getting ready to go out there and brief or you need to respond to reporters.
Did they brief you on a regular basis in you know, kind of looking at all of the countries in their region and talking to you about what was going on, not just a daily thing? But how often would they give you a roundup?
It would depend on, I mean, obviously the Middle East has become a big focus, and so I would tend to have people who worked in that region. You know, I'd be in meetings with them. I'd tend to get them to come by my office and give me briefings on particular days, on particular subjects, just so I'd make sure that I was always keeping on top of the things. One of the things that a press secretary doesn't want to have happen is to be caught blindsided in a press briefing. Meaning you weren't on top of some item that was of interest to the press corps that was a news item, and it comes out of left field and you're not prepared for it. You want to be as prepared as possible. Now, with that said, you're going to get some questions from time to time that maybe you don't know what the answer is to it, and you don't want to try and fake it. That's when you get into trouble, and you'll simply say, "Let me take your question and get back to you."
Can you think of some cases where that happened, and what was your response?
I can't remember off the top of my head right this where it happened where I didn't know the answer to a question.
Well, that was an issue that that you had not known about that had come up.
Not off the top of my head. Been too far detached for it now.
Yeah. Can you go back and tell us about your relationship with the president?
Sure.
How often did you see the president? When did you first know him? Like during the campaign, how well did you know him?
And then.
How often did you see
him
on a daily basis?
I've known the president. I think I probably met him first time. It might have been back as early as 88 during his father's presidential campaign. But, I mean, it was just in passing, maybe shaking his hand or something like that. I really started getting to know him during 1993-94 when he was running for governor. At the time, I was the campaign manager and spokesman for my mother, who was running for the Texas Railroad Commission, as I mentioned earlier. And so I kind of started to get to know him there, being in some of the same places at the same time. And then, you know, over the years after that, as I mentioned, I was chief of staff to a state senator when he was governor for a time being, and got to know him a little bit more during that time as well. And obviously, when I went to work for him, that's when I really started to get to know him well. And traveling with him during the first campaign, obviously I spent a lot of time with him. And both on the road and in the front of our airplane where the staff would stay while we were traveling across the country campaigning, and the press was in the back part of the plane during that time. But, you know, one of the strengths from my standpoint, or that I felt was one of my strengths as press secretary, was that I knew the president very well. We developed not just a professional relationship, but a friendship. And part of that goes to our Texas roots and some similar interests that we had outside of even politics. And that was very beneficial to me, but having started with him back in the governor's office, I really came to understand the way he approached issues, his principles, his philosophy, and so it made it easier for me to be able to speak for him once I became press secretary, and even before that when I was just another spokesman or part of the team of spokespeople worked for the president.
Did you see him, say, most mornings when he came in? He comes in about 7 o'clock?
You asked that.
Did you see him when he would come in the morning?
I would frequently pop over there. That was a good time to catch him, particularly if there was big news that day that I needed to bounce something off or get his thoughts on. It was very easy for me, being where the press secretary's office is, to just pop over to the Oval Office and walk in there. He tends to get in sometimes a little bit before 7. You know, starting to get in more and more a little bit earlier, but he always knew he was going to be in there by probably 7 o'clock. And between 7 and 7:30 was a good time to walk over there and catch him and get his thoughts on a particular issue. And it was usually, you know, before he got, well, at 7:30 he'd go into his intelligence briefing, so then it was going to be hard to catch him at that. 7:30 we had, or actually I take that back, sometimes they start that early, sometimes it's more like 8 o'clock, but we had senior staff at 7:30 each morning, so if I was going to catch him first thing in the morning, I'd go over there a little bit after 7, after I'd been at home and read through the papers and done a little bit of my preparation for the day, and I kind of had a sense of what might be coming that day. And it was good to get his thoughts before I went into senior staff and started talking about what's going to be on the press's mind on that particular day.
What would he have read before he had seen you?
Contrary to what has been said out there, he said it himself, so he's partly to blame for that, that he doesn't read the newspapers. He's really referring to the editorials and the opinion pages. He doesn't like to pay attention to those. If he needs someone's opinion, he knows he can get them elsewhere. But he does, over in the residence, he would have the Washington Post, New York Times, USA Today, and Wall Street Journal, if my memory serves me correctly. And so he would skim through the papers and look at stories of interest. Mrs. Bush reads through the papers very closely. She scrutinizes them very closely. And some days I would, in fact, get a call maybe from the president and ask me about some story that was in, I don't know, USA Today or some paper. And I would, you know, double back and just take, maybe if I hadn't read the story closely, just double back and take a close look at it and what it said, then walk over to the Oval Office, and invariably it would be, well, Mrs. Bush brought it up this morning, so I thought I'd ask you, what's that about or something, what's going on here? And so, you know, it's just two-way street. Yeah. I'd get his thoughts, he'd also get my thoughts, and you know, we knew how each other thought.
Would he tell you what he wanted you to say?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes. Other times he would ask my advice. I'd say probably a lot of times, you know, he'd have his opinions. And then there'd be other times when he'd ask for my views. Sometimes I'd just offer my views right up front, said this is what is going to be question. All right, I'm going to get a lot of questions on this today. Or you may get questions about this when you have your press availability, whatever format that might have been on that particular day. And, you know, so we'd make sure we were on the same page.
Mm-hmm. Would he also tell you how to say it?
Sometimes. I mean, it depends. I mean, it depends. It depends on the issue and what the topic was, but at times, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Can you think of something?
Gosh, I'm trying to, now that I've been out of there for about 10 months, I'm trying to refresh my memory on some of those. I'm trying to think of a time when he'd say, well, just say this, and, you know, I don't think we need to say anything else. I mean, there were times like that. Maybe something will come to my mind here in a minute.
Uh-huh. Okay. In the senior staff meeting, what role does the press secretary play in the senior staff?
Well, when I was there, and this is all the, you know, 20 to 25 people probably in the room. It's in the Roosevelt Room in the White House where it would take place each morning at 7:30. The chief of staff would run it. If for some reason the chief of staff had to be with the president, then usually the deputy chief of staff, whoever's next kind of senior in that line, would run the meeting. But typically, we would start off, the chief of staff would turn to the scheduler who would go over the president's, here's what's on the president's public schedule for the day, just so everybody in the White House knew, knew to be what to be prepared for as well. Then it would immediately, that was very quick, then it would immediately go to me whoever the press secretary was, my predecessor, Ari Fleischer, before that. And I would use that time. I would keep it pretty focused. I wouldn't bother the senior staff with stuff that I knew I could get from an individual that wasn't, you know, big news. I think on any given day, if you go back and look, you're going to have at most probably about 10, maybe 12 topics that are covered in the briefing at most. But usually there are about 1 to 3 that are kind of the bigger news of the day. And as press secretary, that's usually what I would spend my time focusing on, the top 1 or 2, maybe 3 issues of a day. Dealing with it a lot myself. Other issues I might you know, divide it up between my deputy press secretaries and say, you know, why don't you go gather information on this and pull information together so that I'll have that when I'm asked about it. And then we have some prep time before the gaggle and briefing that we go over some of those issues and I can get questions answered or I can call someone if I need any follow-up. But in senior staff, I would use that as an opportunity to do a few different things depending on what the news of the day was. You know, obviously I'd say, you know, here's where our focus is in terms of the message we're trying to get across, but here's what I think is going to be on the press corps' mind and issues that are going to come up and things that I'm going to need more information on. And I might be able to get some of that information and feedback from the senior staff right then and there. A lot of times I'd say, here's where I'm thinking about coming from on this particular issue. And, you know, you could have a good discussion about where we ought to be and where we ought to position ourselves on a particular issue and get feedback. There might be other issues where there's going to be a need to collect a lot of information. And so maybe it's, you know, National Security Advisor or the council's office, and they say, well, let me get someone on that, and we'll get you the information. We know you need it, you know, by 9 o'clock or something. I'd always try to push it a little bit ahead of the gaggle so that if the information came to me and I needed additional information or had additional questions, I could get that in the time between the gaggle or between the briefing. And so, you know, a lot of your morning is spent collecting information and going to the people you need to get that information. And you're also, I mean, as press secretary, you're juggling the president's schedule with your schedule dealing with the press corps, meaning your gaggle and press briefing. And that's always kind of scheduled around the president's schedule because you're going to be attending policy briefings with the president. You might be attending cabinet meetings, congressional meetings, world leader meetings. So you're trying to balance it because you need to be there as press secretary to be able to respond and answer the questions that are going to be on the press corps' mind and give them good, credible answers.
Mm-hmm. And then when you go into the gaggle, what do you hope to accomplish in the gaggle? What are the uses for a White House?
Sure. Well, the gaggle is, I mean, typically it's 15 minutes or so, usually at most. Sometimes it goes a little bit over. Sometimes it's even much shorter. But the gaggle is an opportunity for the press secretary to, one, kind of go through the president's schedule for the day, maybe make some announcements, or, as is the top of the briefing sometimes, or talk about a particular message or that the president's trying to emphasize on that particular day. It's also an opportunity for the press secretary to get a sense of where a better sense of where the press corps is coming from as well. It's an opportunity for the press corps to start getting some answers to some of their questions. So it's pretty informal. After September 11, well, the history of it, I mean, it used to be just the wire reporters catching the White House press secretary after the senior staff and kind of saying, hey, we need to put something on the wires. You got to, you know, maybe do you have any information or asking about a particular subject. They could go put news on the wire. Particularly after September 11th, from my recollection, it is, and because of the 24/7 news cycle that we live in, and when people are looking for constant information to put on the websites now and everything else, most people come to the gaggle. And actually, sometimes the gaggle can be a little more newsy than the briefing,
right.
Because in the briefing, now that it's televised and live, sometimes you might be a little more careful in terms of what you're saying.
And after the briefing, I mean, after the gaggle, there's a transcript made and it goes around the administration. And what is the value of that, of having it go around?
It's good for everybody to see. And I mean, I sometimes I'd get feedback, say, hey, I saw your response to this particular question and you know, here's some additional information, or maybe you should say it a little bit more like this, or I don't know. I mean, it basically goes pretty far throughout the White House and the administration, certainly to key people throughout the administration, and they can see what's on the press's mind and what the press secretary is saying, and it's helpful to communicators in particular, communicators throughout the administration at all the different departments, so they know where the White House is in terms of the president's position.
Right. So it's 1 year.
And it goes across. I mean, it's sent out from State Department out to embassies and everything else.
One person that I talked to who was in the White House at the time you were there was saying that she found it a good way to know what things to talk about and what not to talk about.
Absolutely.
So it was useful as that kind of device. Do you think that prior...
And a lot of times you might have someone, I don't know, in a various department or within the White House, maybe it's White House Counsel's Office, and someone at the Justice Department is saying, well, what have you all said on this particular issue? They can take that section of the gaggle, send it to them, and there you have it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, now the White House is in a position with speaking of Justice Department with some issues in terms of transcripts, and here we are transcribing everything ourselves.
Yeah. So. What about the briefing? And what use is the briefing?
Well, I mean, the briefing goes as long as these basically as long as the press corps wants it to go. By tradition, the senior wire correspondent is the one who calls the end of the briefing. So it goes anywhere from probably typically 30, 35 to 45, sometimes up close to an hour if it's a particularly heavy news day. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's obviously useful for reporters in the sense that they're getting answers to their questions so that they can go back and report to the American people. But it's not the only source of information, and I think most reporters will tell you, you know, they can get a lot more information other ways as well. And they, you know, they've got to go and do their reporting and checking with sources and trying to dig into information and get the scoops and everything else. I mean, with this White House, one of the things about this president is that he's very disciplined, and he likes to make the big news on his own time frame, uh-huh. and announce things on his own time frame. So. You know, a lot of times the role of the press secretary, part of the role of the press secretary is to, as much as you can, leave the president as much flexibility as possible before he's made a decision. You don't want to tie the president's hands. You want him to be able to go out there and, well, to think through things and get all the advice and input he needs from throughout the administration and through the policymaking process, and then be able to make the decision on his own time frame. And obviously reporters are trying to get a scoop and trying to figure out, which is their job, trying to figure out which direction the president may be going on a particular issue or a particular policy. But sometimes the press secretary has to hold the line and try to leave that flexibility there for the president. Mm-hmm. The last thing you want to do is box him in before particularly a major decision is made.
Do you think, though, that sometimes when you're waiting to make news on his terms that you lose something because others jump in and define an issue? An example of one is corporate responsibility. In 2004, you all took that as an important mm-hmm. issue and discussed it in the campaign. Yet when it came up as an issue in late 2001, it was not viewed as a big issue. And the first time that the president really talks about it is in Wall Street speech, and that is in July
right.
of 2002.
Yeah, that's one of those issues that bubbled up. But it
bubbled up pretty fast,
it did.
You know, with Enron and WorldCom. And that really happened at the end of 2001 and 2002. But because it took so long to get a response that others came in and defined that issue.
Yeah, and part of that sometimes is you're at the whims of the policymaking process. Sometimes the policymaking process doesn't move as fast, and the way it's structured at the White House, you have the White House staff. They're dealing with the various cabinet departments that are focused on a particular issue. In that case, it'd be Treasury, maybe Commerce, and a few other agencies probably. And they're trying to pull information together and make policy recommendations to the president. It goes through a deputies committee, meaning all the deputies in the various offices within the White House, and then it goes through the principals, and then it goes to the president after the principals have signed off, said, here's what our recommendation is, here's pros and cons, and, you know, even throughout that process, sometimes the president's going to be getting briefings and saying, asking questions or saying, I want you to look at this particular area. You know, I think that from a president's standpoint, you want to make sure you're making the right decision, that you're not making decisions necessarily based on what the news coverage is, that you're going to look at it and make the right decision. But at the same time, from a communication standpoint, yes, that can present problems for you because it looks like, you know, in some instances, maybe you're dragged to the table.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it all is said and done, sometimes, you know, that's forgotten after the fact once your policy comes out.
Mm-hmm. But it seems one of the difficulties of your operation was that as much as you focused on these issues that you wanted to focus on, that it was difficult to listen at the same time, that people would be so busy advocating.
Absolutely.
That's hard to listen.
No, you do get kind of in the bubble
uh-huh.
in the White House, and it's, you know, you want to be able to rely on people on the outside to help, you know, provide some perspective to you as well. But when, you know, it's a lot easier for me now to step back and look and say, you know, well, here's what the White House maybe ought to be doing than it was when you're in the daily grind of things and you're focused on so many different issues or participating in meetings that sometimes it's hard to step back and realize when things are bubbling up how big of an issue it might be at the time.
Mm-hmm. Some people that have been in White House, senior White House staff positions, have had groups of people that they went to who are outside of the White House that would be sources for them for sounding as sounding boards. And did you have anybody, any group of people that you went to?
I would bounce things off. It was primarily people inside the administration, various people. There were some, and Karen Hughes is obviously someone I was close to. I probably wasn't often that I did, but you know, a lot of times participate maybe in some meetings with some people that are on the outside, even some of my predecessors from time to time I might talk to. Not, I wouldn't say often, but from time to time. Probably should have more so, probably to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
But you know, like you pointed out, you get so caught up in the day-to-day stuff.
Can you give us a sense of the difference between campaigning and governing when you're trying to work communications in those two environments? What are the differences?
Well, I mean, the difference is when you're governing, obviously you have to deliver results. I mean, you have to get things accomplished for the American people. Once you're in office, people expect you, okay, now follow through on what you pledged to do during the campaign and get things done. In a campaign, it's... And the other thing about a campaign is you very much know it's for a limited period that it's going to end on Election Day, except for 2000 when it ended a few weeks later or several weeks later. But you know, you have a little bit different mindset. And I can tell you from this president, the way he thinks about things now, he's sometimes fallen short on some of his goals in this area. But campaign, there's a time for campaigning, and the rhetoric might get a little tougher. But when you're in office, hopefully as much as you can in Washington, D.C., where the environment has a natural built-in bitterness and rancor about it, I guess is the best way to say it. But hopefully you're trying to elevate the discourse and trying to figure out ways to bridge some differences and find some compromise, based on your own principles in the president's view.
You were talking about how the president, when he was governor, worked with Democrats. Why do you think that hasn't worked?
I think it's several reasons.
In Washington.
I think that both sides bear some responsibility for it, meaning Democrats and Republicans. When you reach out, you have to have people that are willing to reach back. Obviously, with what has happened in Iraq and how controversial that has become over the last few years, and the president's poll numbers coming down, it's probably led to some more divisive rhetoric, and then to some extent, I think the media is complicit a little bit, because the media is looking for, at times they're looking for controversy, and they're looking, they like it when they get people going at each other to some extent, but the big responsibility really lies with the parties and the elected leaders. I mean, I think one of the interesting things about 2008 that I think you're seeing is that people are looking for someone who is different, not viewed as your typical politician, someone who is going to be focusing on solving the issues that we all care about, that are at the center of our daily lives, like education and energy, the environment, healthcare. I mean, those are all kind of issues that I think people out there in America are saying, look, find a way to work together and get these things done. It's why Giuliani, I think, is doing well on the Republican side. It's why Obama is someone who's pretty popular on the Democratic side, because people view them as not your typical politician, and people that are in their own different ways are interested in trying to find solutions to these problems.
Mm-hmm.
But Washington's a tough place to change in terms of, the president ran on, one of the big things he ran on was, I'm a United, Not a Divider. Said I'm gonna change the tone, and we need to change the tone in Washington. And there were some successes early on, particularly with the education bill and working with Senator Kennedy and Congressman Miller, both Democrats, and passing some accountability measures for education. There are other areas as well, but because of a variety of factors, Iraq being part of it, it's been hard. More of late.
Uh-huh. Did you talk to the president about where he saw the press's place?
Oh, let me back up to finish on one thought. I mean, one thing that the president has always tried to do as president, before that as governor, is try to elevate the discourse. But as I said, I mean, there are a lot of forces in Washington that are pulling on elected leaders. There's the liberal side of the Democratic Party that's trying to pull Democratic elected leaders in one direction. There's certainly the further conservative sides of the Republican side that are trying to pull Republican leaders, elected leaders in certain directions. And those are tough forces to deal with. You really got to be able to try to find leaders that you can work with,
uh-huh.
and that will rise above that.
He certainly used very tough rhetoric on the Democrats, and Cheney has as well.
Yeah, well, but I think if you go back, I agree. I mean, to some extent, more so probably the vice president sometimes has been able to say things a little harsher than maybe the president would say. But if you look back at a lot of the president during his governing days, it's changed somewhat. I think even more. Probably after these last elections, with the Democrats taking control on Iraq, particularly, but even there, if you look after this last election, I mean, he tried to do some reaching out, but Democrats insisted on a certain direction as well, and you couldn't find a meeting of minds on those issues. And I don't know that it was going to be possible to begin with, because right now you have a situation, over six years into his time in office, that. I think the blood in the water is just too much to kind of change that at this point in his time in office, and it's going to have to be up to maybe the next administration and the next Congress to be able to do that. I just don't see that changing much in his remaining time in office, unfortunately, mm-hmm. for the American people.
When Cheney goes out and speaks. Is what he's going to say pass through filters in the West Wing so everybody knows what he's going to say?
Most of the time, yeah. No, ideally, yes. And it's a way with any cabinet secretary as well. If you're out there giving a major speech, those are things that tend to be run by the White House, and so they know what you're going to be saying in that particular speech. Now, you get into Q&A, and sometimes there are surprises along the way.
Mm-hmm. When you and the president have you talked about the press and the press's role in government?
Yes.
Part of that
is not only the president's view, but and the president has said it publicly in terms of, he knows that the only way to get his message out is through the press, and the only way for the press to get what they need is to be able to ask him questions and stuff too. With that said. The reality of it might not always be that each side's getting across what they want or getting as much as they would like in terms of the president getting his message out, in terms of the press corps getting all the information that they want. That kind of goes back to some of what I said about the president likes to make decisions on his own time frame. The press is out there to try to break news and mm-hmm. report news and get stuff maybe ahead of when you're ready to talk about it, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And so the president, he's someone that likes discipline when it comes to the communicators, meaning that you aren't going out there and freewheeling speaking without. And it's something that we've always done, and it goes back even to his governor's office, is try to make sure before we're, as much as you can, before you're out there talking about particular issues, that you're talking within the team first and making sure that everybody's on the same page and that it's where the president wants you to be as well, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. When you were at a briefing and responding to reporters' questions, your boss is the president, but where are the American people and the obligations to provide information?
Well, I mean, you are serving, you're there hopefully to serve the American people as much as anything, but you are working for the president. He was the one that was elected to office. As press secretary, I was speaking for him.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't speaking for myself or anyone else. I was there to articulate his views and to help shed some light on some of the decisions that he was making as well. As I mentioned, he's the one that was elected, but you also have a responsibility as a press secretary to try to provide as much information as you can back to the American people through the press corps. Within the constraints that might be put on you from the president or
uh-huh.
The White House in general.
And what kind of responsibility do you have to try to encourage White House officials to talk?
Well,
reporters?
It depends on issues, but generally speaking, from a communications standpoint, You usually take the side of it's better to provide more than less. But it depends on various issues, too. Mm-hmm. There are times when the press secretary's hands are going to be tied. I can speak back to my own time regarding the leak investigation that ultimately led to the conviction of Scooter Libby. After that really got underway, my hands were tied. The White House counsel's office kind of led the way in that and said, we're not going to talk about it. From a communication standpoint, that's not always the best way to go. But anytime you get into legal issues, usually the counsel's office is the first to jump up there and say, we shouldn't say anything about it. A lot of times that can look bad and it can look defensive. It can put the press secretary or even the president in a difficult position when you can't talk about it.
What lessons did you learn from that experience, and what would you do over?
Probably a lot of lessons from that experience. One of the things another skill you learn is being in communications and having worked in it for a while is, be careful how you say things on maybe sensitive subjects, because you know that those words may come back someday in some other way and come back. In this case, it came back to bite me a little bit, but there were some White House officials who, had told me that they weren't involved in any way in the disclosure of Valerie Plame's name, and I reported the way I said it back to the press was that those individuals assured me they were not involved. So to some extent, I was putting the onus back on those individuals, and I was careful about the way I said it. But looking back on it, that was and some of this, someday I'm actually working on a book, and these are some topics I may get into in more detail, so I don't want to go too far because I got some reporters here covering this, but save some news here. But and I believe it's important for the position that I was in to kind of provide some information back in that format for history's sake. With the investigation getting underway, now when I initially said on one individual there was no investigation or none that we knew of, but once the investigation was getting underway, or we knew that the investigation was getting underway, it's probably best not to get into that at all and draw a line and say, just not going to get into that in terms of publicly exonerating people, essentially.
Why didn't you take it and put it elsewhere?
And what happened was, what do you mean, set up a whole different...
To have a unit like
the Clinton White House did.
That's right.
With Lewinsky. Mike McCurry did that with Lewinsky. Well, I think that it's a much different issue. And... at the time, I know from the president's standpoint, from higher-ups in the White House, there was a lot that wasn't known. And the decision was made at the White House that once the investigation got underway, that we just weren't going to talk about it. Now, in hindsight, it probably would have been best for me in the position of being press secretary when people were saying I was so involved to do what I tried to do after the investigation got underway, which was, look, I'm not going to go down a list of names and start saying... and you shouldn't read anything into that one way or the other. Now, there are some other issues involved where I eventually came back and made some comments about about Scooter Libby after I initially had not, but that was for some different reasons and not necessarily of my own choosing. Mm-hmm. But I still did get assurances from him.
Okay.
I'll leave that at that.
All righty. Well, let's...
I've got their curiosity.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Would you like to...
Buy the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably a year away, at least.
finishing up on the Nessun quote, in which he said that all the press secretaries know what needs to be done about going out, gathering the information, making sure that it's right, mm-hmm. and getting it all out, he said... that while everybody knows that, it's very difficult to do.
Absolutely.
And what are the forces that that operate against getting the full story out?
Well, I mean, some of it I touched on earlier. I mean, it depends on who you're dealing with particular issues. Some people are more helpful than others. Just like when a reporter is dealing with a particular source, and on some issues they're more helpful than on others. So one, you're trying to make sure you go, okay, what what are the questions here related to this issue? What are the potential questions or at least areas I'm going to get asked about on this particular subject? And you're trying to cover all your bases. Sometimes, you know, you're up against the clock trying to pull together as much as you can. And of course, you know, one of the things that you say, I mean, I'll go back to a incident that got plenty of attention, and that was a vice president's hunting accident. Well, that happened down in Corpus, or in the Corpus Christi, Texas area, actually B County in Texas, and I wasn't there. And you had a vice president that was set on getting that out in a certain way, and I don't think it was the best way, and advised to, you know, to do it a different way. And these guys knew that I'd kind of given that advice at that time, but because I'm the public face, I'm the one that they're going to beat up on when something like that happens and they're not informed about it in a timely manner. I thought we could have prevented a lot of problems with that whole issue when it was just an accident if we'd gotten all the information out immediately or as quick as possible. But at the same time, then when that when it wasn't put out there, at least all the information, and you were getting bits and pieces, I tried to go and get as much information as I could on the topic or on the subject so I could answer the questions. But there was only so much I was able to pull together for a few different reasons, probably.
Uh-huh. Why would they
want a willingness? One, a willingness of the vice president to share a lot of information about it. And ultimately, though, you'll recall, and it was something that we were advocating in the White House, get out there. You know, he needs to get out there and answer these questions, and needs to be seen, and needs to respond to the questions that are being asked. But what I would do is tell the reporters, look, I'm telling you what I know, and you know, if you got, you know, additional questions, you might want to direct that to the vice president's office, of course. It wasn't any intention on my part to make them run up against brick wall, but that's sometimes the way the vice president's office is with the press. They're a little more standoffish at times.
Did you find that was well, maybe not typical, but that was not an unusual situation where the vice president's office would not provide information?
Well, interestingly enough, one person who's a senior member of the vice president's team, I'll leave unnamed, was probably one of the more reliable sources that I could go to and get information. And this individual, he would tell me, you know, everything I needed to know on a particular subject. I mean, sometimes I'd walk out of senior staff, and someone may have said something to senior staff, and go, you know, so-and-so said such and such, but you also need to know this, because if you start going down this road, here's something you need to know about, and was very helpful. So it depends on who you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
There are different personalities you're dealing with throughout the White House. But like I said, the ultimate way to get answers was for the press secretary to just go directly to the president.
Mm-hmm. Okay, would you all like to ask some questions?
When a journalist been particularly troublesome on an issue, for instance, David Gregory,
can you get close to the microphone? Because your voice is breaking up.
You're saying David Gregory. I thought you were going to say April Ryan, but no, she's sitting over here. That's why I said that. Go ahead.
When a journalist proves to be particularly troublesome on an issue, for instance, David Gregory or Helen Thomas, how does that benefit the journalist, and how can that be used to your own benefit?
Well, being out of the White House for 10 months now, the flashbacks of Helen and David have started to subside finally, so that's kind of, your transition is going well. But I'm sorry, I interrupted your question. What was the last part of your question? How do you deal with them?
How can that be used for your benefit?
Yeah. Well, I mean, let me give you an example. The vice president's hunting accident, and, you know, some of these reporters, my friends here in the audience, may have a different view, but the vice president's hunting accident, we didn't handle that well from a communication standpoint. I mean, that's a crisis communication situation. Whenever you're in a crisis communication situation, my philosophy is get everything you know out there, everything that you know as a fact, get it out there as quickly as possible. And, you know, because eventually it's going to come out. And we saw that happen even with the vice president's hunting accident. Now, it was an accident, and because of the way the vice president chose to deal with that issue, it became, I think, at least 3 full days in the White House briefing room for me that week where I was getting peppered with questions on it. From the standpoint of the American people, I think after day 3 there, or day 2 of it, when that was essentially all the questions that were being asked of me in the White House briefing room, they started going, wait a second, you know, that look, this is bad, it's terrible, but it's an accident, and why aren't you spending more time focusing on other issues? Now, from a standpoint of a White House reporter, they got a job to do, and they're trying to find out answers to questions, and they don't have all the answers at that point, so they're, part of it is they're doing their job, and it's kind of like when you're trying to pass legislation, they talk about it's like making sausage. You don't want to see it, but you need to look at the end product. And a lot of times with reporters, what's going on in that briefing room is they're trying to get answers to questions that they're having trouble getting answers to, or trying to find out legitimate information. But I encourage you to, you know, judge the reporter based on their actual reporting later in the day. And I, you know, I know that David Gregory, for instance, he can be very combative in that briefing room, but he's a pretty fair reporter at the end of the day. I mean, he'll go out there and present both sides of the issue. But there are times when you can turn that to your advantage on reporters. I just cited one. You know, you kind of, in that instance with the hunting accident, is just kind of keep tossing the rope to them and let them hang themselves to some extent, and people get sick and tired of it. Now there are other instances where you can't use that to your advantage. You know, the leak investigation is a prime example. Not quite two years. After I'd gone out there and said that individuals assured me they were not involved in this, it became known publicly, well, that at least one of those individuals had spoken about Valerie Plame to some reporters, and I had to go out there, and the press had legitimate questions to ask. Well, you said such and such nearly 2 years ago, and do you still stand by that? We have a right to the answers on that. But my hands were tied in that instance. Couldn't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm. And Helen?
And there are other days, too, when you can, as press secretary, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go on.
I've lost my train of thought.
No.
Seriously.
Let's go. Well, there's Helen.
Did you have any follow-up on that question?
Earlier I said, why would a journal do that? Because a lot of times that actually makes journalists look bad.
Well, that's part of the maybe a downside of the live briefing now. You get to see how they're doing their job and trying to get to the actual report. And that's why I said that it's important to look at the end product as well and what gets seen widely, whereas a briefing may, some days obviously it's going to be live across the board, but most days it's probably just C-SPAN. And so it's not seen widely, but when they go on the news that evening or when they write their column and many more people see it, judge it based on that. I'll come to the defense of my friends in the press corps there on that issue to some extent.
Would it serve as a kind of buttress an argument of yours that you go around to people within the White House and say, look, we've got to be responsive to these questions?
Absolutely. Say, we're going to get hammered on this, and the president's not going to look good. In fact, a lot of times the way I'd phrase things is, look, we got to make sure we're serving the president as best we can, and the best way we can, you know, put the president in a good position is to go out there and address these issues, and I need your help doing that.
Can you think of any issues where being beat up by the press corps did lead to providing more information than otherwise might have come out?
It's also a way to force people to deal with a particular policy matter. For instance, you mentioned corporate responsibility earlier. There are other issues where maybe the press is hammering you on, for instance, on weapons of mass destruction with regards to Iraq. Well, you know, we're not finding them. Did the president mislead us? Was the president, you know, what happened here? And some of the way you can kind of sometimes force an issue there is, look, we got to provide as much backup as we can, you know, while protecting things that are of legitimate national security interest. But, you know, I think it ultimately leads to things like the National Intelligence Estimate, parts of it being made available publicly so you can back up your assertion that, no, he was making decisions based on what he was being told by the intelligence community. And the National Intelligence Estimate, people remember, is considered the collective judgment of the intelligence community. Mm-hmm. And we released parts of that, after that became a hot topic. Mm-hmm. To show the American people, show the press corps where here's how the president made it. I mean, there are any number of issues like that. Homeland Security, after 9/11, there was a push to develop a separate cabinet agency. I was still deputy at the time. I know that my predecessor went out there, and I think he was the only one that said it, but basically said, you know, no, that we're against creating a separate department. Mm-hmm. And so when it came time that the president said, well, we're for it, it became portrayed as a reversal, and mm-hmm. that, as it should have been. Now, that may be one instance where the press secretary, my predecessor, was going a little bit further than maybe people would have preferred. I can't remember for sure. He may have had that. He may have checked that himself. But again, that's a place where you want to leave the president as much flexibility as possible, if you can. I don't think any final decisions have been made at that point. But there we are, on record now saying that we're against something.
But later, because
the issue is becoming such a hot issue, it's forcing people internally to look at this and take a good hard look at it. And then the president comes to the decision that, well, he supports doing it.
But was it an instance where they wanted to put out the message that they were against it as part of the bargaining process with the Congress?
Yeah, and that may have been. I don't remember it specifically, all the details of it. But sometimes as press secretary, yeah, you're out there and you're looking to the legislative liaison at the White House maybe. How can I help put out a message that will help advance the president's particular legislative matter? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there are times when the press secretary can help in those efforts.
Mm-hmm. Questions?
I'm interested possibly following a career in a press office after I graduate. And I know you briefly talked about the positions that you held in different offices on a variety of levels of government. And I was wondering which one you found the most rewarding and where you learned the most.
Well, what I found most rewarding was being press secretary. There's nothing like it. I mean, it's something no one can ever take away from you. It's an amazing experience. There are obviously some days that you wish you weren't there, but those are far and few between, I think, overall. There's nothing like being at the center of government, at the highest levels of government, and so there's nothing that compares to being press secretary. And, I don't think I'll ever have an experience like that again, and be able to be at the president's side as he travels not only the country but the world. You know, other things. I actually enjoy the campaign side of things too. I talked to you about I like the strategic side of things, and I enjoyed being a campaign manager. It's a great experience, and working with all the different elements of a campaign, from the fundraising to the message development to the paid media as well, and the advertising that you're doing, and dealing with opposition research, organization issues, and kind of overseeing all that and saying, and making sure that you pull together a winning strategy. I was campaign manager for three of my mother's races for statewide office. They were all successful, and two of them were pretty competitive, tough races, one against an incumbent and one against the son of a former lieutenant governor, longtime lieutenant governor in Texas, and grandson of a former governor, so with a well-known name in Texas. So the challenges of that were quite rewarding, and to be able to experience, and then to be able to see it all lead up to election day, and then election night when you win. Being traveling press secretary on the first campaign was a great experience. Something I'd never done a presidential campaign before, and there I was, kind of on the front lines of that campaign during the general election, and getting to know a lot of the White House reporters that I would later be working with at the White House. And so, you develop those relationships. But, I'm one that enjoys the campaign side of things, too. And sometimes that's more fun than governing. Governing sometimes takes a little bit longer to get things done.
How does the president enjoy press conferences? What is his view of press conferences?
They're something that obviously are necessary and important to do. If you look back over the course of time, from the beginning, I think that you've seen over time that we've started out where maybe we weren't doing a whole lot historically, and you track all this, so you can correct me if I'm wrong. But I know when I came on as press secretary, one of the things, one of the goals that I kind of put in my mind was, let's do more. And some of that's pushing the president to do it. There are times when he knows it's very important to go out there and maybe do a prime time news conference, and that can be to our benefit. There are other times it's like, why do I need to do this? And he's also one that would much prefer a more informal setting with reporters than a formal setting. He would much prefer to do a press conference probably in the Rose Garden rather than the White House briefing room. The White House briefing room, which is almost finished in terms of being renovated, but it's a pretty small, cramped space. And the reporters are up very close, and sometimes it can lead to, you know, more confrontational approach, I think, between the briefer and the press corps. But in the Rose Garden, you know, the press corps could be set back further, and it's a little more, you know, while it looks nicer too, on some days, it also is a little more relaxed environment to it, less tense than I think the briefing room, or less tense than the East Room, where the president might do a primetime news conference or a news conference with someone like Tony Blair, a well-known world leader, for instance. But the president also did a lot of press availabilities in addition to news conferences, where he would take questions maybe after a particular event, like he's talking on energy, and then he takes some questions from reporters. And sometimes that would be maybe just the White House press pool versus the entire press corps. Mm-hmm. And the other element of it is he's not someone who likes a big build-up to a press conference. And when I say that, I mean that the press corps has always got to be ready anytime the president might decide to take questions. But he would prefer that, you know, if we're thinking about a news conference, he wouldn't make up his decision really till the morning of his final decision. But there's too much build-up in his mind, and it becomes too much of a show if you announce it, you know, maybe 2 or 3 days in advance.
But in what way is it really a show? It doesn't seem to me that the questions are really that much different.
I agree with that to a large extent, although sometimes there's more maybe peacocking, as the president would refer to it, by reporters. Wow. I'm telling you some of his thinking.
Or a seersucker.
He always loved looking out there and see some reporter putting on their makeup or combing their hair or something or wearing their best suit that particular day, and he'd get a kick out of that. But he would try to go into a press conference with a mindset of trying to, you know, break the ice a little bit, because sometimes it can seem, you know, too formal and too tense, and you know, so that's why he jokes around a little bit with reporters one on one. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it throws reporters off. Most of them know that's just the way he is. And it's a way for him to kind of, you know, ease some of the tension in the room, but also to make himself more relaxed as he's answering questions. Uh-huh. It's just the way he is.
If he has, like, say recently he's been doing a series of off-the-record sessions with reporters, what in the long run is the value of that?
Well, the value of that, and we did some of that when I was press secretary, the value of that from a reporter standpoint is that they can get to know the president's mm-hmm. thinking a lot better. You get into issues, you go back over history, up until more recent times, there are some presidents that never talked on the record unless they were doing a speech or something, mm-hmm. for instance, with reporters. I'm talking in groups. They'd bring them in, and it's a way for reporters to get to have a better understanding of the way the president thinks about a particular issue, or maybe the principle behind the issue, how he approaches his decision-making. So from that standpoint, I think it's a great benefit to reporters. Now, reporters will say, some reporters have a lot of pressure, say that, well, anytime we're talking to the president, it should be on the record. It's the president of the United States, and that's mm-hmm. how, you know, times have changed, obviously.
Yeah.
If you go back over history and look at presidents back, you know, as far back as FDR, for instance.
Yeah. But it just seems from the viewpoint of a White House, if you can't use the information, what good is it
in
the long run?
You know, you're not having the quotes out there per se, but it mm-hmm. goes into the reporter's mind, and the reporter is able to, have that in his mind or her mind, and be able to. You know, that it gets reflected in reporting.
So did you all notice a difference? From the sessions when you had them?
Well, I mean, And again, I mean, this is one of those areas where you get into some issues with reporters saying, you know, we love these sessions. I mean, invariably, reporters will come up to me and say, that was great. You know, particularly reporters that haven't covered the White House for a long time, or someone unlike Ken Herman, who covered him all the way back to his days as governor of Texas and maybe doesn't know him as well, because every so often you have new reporters coming onto the White House beat. It's a way for them to get to really understand the thinking behind his decisions and the way he approaches issues. So that is beneficial in that sense, and it's going to always be part of what their thinking is when they're doing their reporting. But yeah, it goes to.
But then if you don't put it in the record, that's.
When the president comes back later in a press conference and answers a question on a topic that he may have been asked about off the record, and he responds to it, and maybe it's a short answer, the reporter might have had the benefit of his full thinking on that particular issue at the same time. So I mean, you know, it's you know, you're trying to balance different needs there and figure out what's the best balance there. You know, are these going to be beneficial to the press as well as the president? And that's why we ended up making decisions that these would be beneficial not only to the president, because he can get to know those reporters better in an informal way, and without worrying about everything he's saying is going to be reported in the news, and it's a way for reporters to get to know him better in the same manner as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the question.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking time to speak with us. Could you expand a little bit on the yardsticks that differentiate a good press secretary from someone that is mediocre? Also, in light of how would things have played out had President Bush not been president at this juncture and you were the press secretary, so we can get a good idea on how to rate the press secretary,
How would things have worked out if the president wasn't the president?
You mean somebody else? Then he was the press secretary for somebody else?
Well, what I'm stating here is a lot of politics is, your background and that you've met folks along the way. And eventually you have your climax of you're in a good position, sitting well with the current president. However, what if things had played out a little bit differently? What if you were to become press secretary once again 10 years from now?
Yeah, I know.
How would you rate yourself, or how would you...
Well, I mean, to some extent, the press secretary is going to be a reflection of the person you're working for. In my case, a reflection of the president, the way he likes to... do things. Hopefully, you're able to keep some of your own persona as well in that experience. I think Tony Snow does a very good job of that as well. In terms of yardsticks, I mean, having been the press secretary, I'd probably leave it to others to try to do those measurements and how various press secretaries stacked up. I think, but there are a couple of general things to keep in mind. The most important thing for a press secretary is his credibility, and for reporters to know that they can trust what he or she is saying, and they know that they can trust that individual. I think, from speaking from my own standpoint, I developed good relationships with the press corps during what was a pretty contentious time. Those relationships were actually built, as I pointed out, long before I even became press secretary, when I was working on the campaign, and then when I was deputy press secretary before that, and that was helpful. So people knew me. There's certain things you can say at the podium, and there's a lot more you can say off the podium when you're talking with reporters. And building that trust between yourself and the reporters is a very important quality that you never want to sacrifice as press secretary, compromise, I should say, as press secretary, because once you do, I mean, you're never going to fully get that trust back. And part of that is reporters are looking to see how in the loop you are as a press secretary. It's important for a press secretary, I think, to really make sure that he is pushing himself or pushing those in the White House to make sure that he's included in as much as he needs to be. I mean, obviously, he can't be included in everything. But, you know, one of the number one things I asked the president when he asked me to be his press secretary was, you know, I just want to make sure that I always have direct access to you anytime of the day. And he said, absolutely, you know, you got to have that. And then there's a question of different chiefs of staff and have different ways of managing the White House. And some chief of staffs, you know, maybe you're the pendulum goes too far one direction or the other in terms of what meetings that chief of staff maybe thinks you should be in. But the press secretary should always be pushing, look, and the press secretary gets the president's schedules, you know, maybe he'll see something that he wasn't included in. A lot of times, if that happened to me and I felt like I needed to be in that meeting, I would go to whoever was the person that was coordinating that meeting or responsible for that meeting. Maybe it was the national security advisor. Maybe it was the legislative affairs director, for instance, and say, look, I need to be there. And, you know, most of the time I think that they would find a way to make sure I was in that meeting. And if it didn't work, then, you know, that just makes more work for the press secretary. And it doesn't serve the president well if you're being excluded from things. So I think those are some of the important qualities about the president, about a press secretary. Obviously, in this day and age with the live briefings and the 24/7 news cycle, I mean, it's very helpful to have a press secretary that is performs well on television. You know, the briefing is to some extent a show. You hate that it has become that to some extent. Hopefully, it's focused on substantive issues for the most part, and a lot of times it is. But a lot of times, what you see covered a good bit of the time, you see more of the show than you do of the substance.
Mm-hmm. Once the briefing takes on that kind of quality, how do you get information to reporters in a way that you think is a non-show kind of setting?
Are you talking about from the podium or off podium?
Off podium. Both, what are some of the other ways off podium?
Well, I mean, as a press secretary all day long, I mean, even, you know, outside the gaggle and briefing, you're going to have people walking in, reporters walking into your office, or they're going to be walking into the offices of your deputies if they maybe don't need to bother the press secretary. And you're maybe on the phone with them. You're dealing, I know that, probably in the 5 to 6 hour each day, or not each day, but a lot of days, the network correspondents would maybe pop up to my office or give me a call on the phone because they were finishing up their packages or getting ready, before they went live on the nightly news, and they just wanted to make sure that they were reporting information accurately or they had everything they needed. Maybe they had one last question or something, so you get a lot of those walk-ins, and when when the camera's not rolling, sometimes you're able to provide a little more guidance than you would when the camera is rolling, because when you're up there at the podium, you're thinking that I'm gonna be up there for maybe 45 minutes, but maybe 7 seconds of it is gonna end up on the nightly news,
mm-hmm.
And it's sometimes it's gonna be probably your worst 7 seconds of the whole briefing.
Yeah.
So you have that in mind, and that's why there's a lot of argument over whether or not it's been beneficial to have the briefing go live and or whether it should live on TV or be covered at TV at all for mm-hmm. some of those reasons.
On an average day, how many drop-ins would you have? How many phone calls would you return, and how many emails?
I mean, it depends on the news of the day. Obviously, if it's a high-volume news day, you're going to have a lot more, but it just depends. And sometimes there might be some, obviously your first priority is kind of the White House reporters, the ones that are covering the White House on a daily basis. Sometimes you'd be getting calls. You might get calls from non-White House reporters that are covering specific issues, and they might not be the number one issue on your mind that day. And you might say, "Here, give it to your deputy or something," or direct it over the National Security Council spokesman and say, "Why don't you handle this for me and get back to this person?" Because you want to try to be as responsive as you can in that position. And one small part of that is making sure you're returning all calls, or that all calls are getting returned, and that people are at least getting callbacks.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of volume are we talking about, say, on emails? How many emails?
Now with emails, you get a lot of those emails, too. I don't even think I could put a number on it, but, some days you'd have stack of calls. I mean, if there's some big breaking news item and maybe it's after the briefing, then your phone's going crazy or people are walking into your office, and sometimes you might just do a mini informal gaggle in your office in that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another question?
Many of the reporters we've interviewed have commented on how skillful the Bush administration has been at being tight-lipped. Do you think this is harmful or beneficial to the American people?
I think it depends on the various issues that you're talking about. I would probably prefer, one of the lessons learned being press secretary. If looking back on it, I probably in some instances would have pushed harder to provide more information. Some of that, when you talk about the White House being skillful and tight-lipped, some of that is just part of the president's style, that the discipline of the White House is the way many in the White House would look at it and say that we're very focused, we're very disciplined. We like to, make the news on our own terms versus policy decisions being driven by the media reporting, for instance. But this administration, I mean, there's definitely some truth to it about how tight-lipped we are, but every administration is to varying degrees as well, and each does it in their own way. And it can be I'll tell you, as someone who has watched White House reporters, I know it can be frustrating for them on some days when they're trying to get information and the White House is not talking, and the president, kind of set a tone throughout the White House that, people that shouldn't be going out there and just leaking information to the press and tying his hands on decisions.
Did he often want to track down leaks?
Yeah, it's a fruitless exercise in my mind. There were some instances. Some instances where maybe he would be particularly upset that some information had gotten out, but the president's not one that lets those things stick with him for a long period of time in terms of, being upset about it. He'll remember it, but there's so many issues you got to deal with, you got to move on, and it's just fruitless to try to figure out who. At least my experience is mm-hmm. who leaked various information that you didn't want out there in the public domain.
Mm-hmm. A final question?
You mentioned a book. Can you elaborate on that?
I'm sorry, you broke up there.
You need to get near the microphone.
Sorry, you mentioned a book coming out. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
I don't want to say too much at this point. The offers are coming in as we speak, and I should be making a decision on which publisher I'll be going with pretty soon. My sense is that it's probably going to be a good year before I get it out. It's an opportunity. One thing that I want to accomplish with the book, from my own standpoint, is I want it to be candid. I want it to be an opportunity for me to share with people what I lived and what I experienced, but I also want it to be an opportunity for me to share with people what I learned and how that might be applied to, make some improvements in the way Washington works, the way our political system works, and also to put it down there for the sake of history so people can piece together all that various information and various perspectives. I mean, I was right there at the center of history, and to some extent I feel that I didn't go in as press secretary thinking that I would do a book, but after having left, I think it's somewhat of, I have a little bit of an obligation, I think, back to the American people and back for history's sake to put that information down there and to provide a behind-the-scenes look at this administration, to get into issues that you all are bringing up about how tight-lipped the administration is, how the administration approached some difficult issues that we had to deal with in the aftermath of September 11th. A book is, in my view, an opportunity to explain that, explain or really go into detail about things that you don't get to do in just a short one-on-one interview with a reporter, for instance. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I made the decision that this is something I want to do. I've never written a book before. I know it's going to be a lot of work, but fortunately I'm in a position where I can dedicate the time I think needs to be dedicated to make it an interesting read.
Okay.
So we'll see.
We'll all buy it. Thanks very much, Scott.
Thank you all. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.